As you know, October is a very special month. It's important here at Grapevine. It's Missions Month, and our emphasis this month is that each of us, as Christians, need to do our part to share the love of Christ and spread the gospel within our respective sphere of influence. Jesus' commandment, which was given to us in Mark 16:15 through 16, states, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, and whoever does not will be condemned." What can I do? What can all of us do? And there's a simple answer. Get involved in Grapevine missions. How do I do it? Well, it turns out the purpose of the Mission Month is to introduce you and equip you in order to be able to do that. First of all of us can pray, and so we need to make sure that we reinforce and emphasize in our prayer life every day that we pray for the church growth, both here locally and internationally. And the next thing you need to do is you need to give. You need to give your time, and you need to give your talent. And if you need training, we'll be more than happy to do that as well. First goal is to acquaint and train the members for different volunteer service opportunities. Last week we had opportunities we saw in-house in the church. Today we're going to see opportunities within the community. Next week we'll be able to see as we reach outwards to Central America. The week after that, talk about Ukraine and Eastern Europe. And then finally we'll cap this all up with a summary and look at mission field and other special opportunities that you, as each person, can participate. Also, we want, again, to strengthen and focus your regular prayer life for the lost, because that's why we're here. We want to share the good news. I mean, it's like if we had the cure for cancer or some other dread disease, we want to be shouting it to the rooftops and telling people how great it is to be free from that. Well, we have that. We have the hope and the knowledge and the assurance, guarantee that we have eternal life and we will be free from this. And that's what we want to share with others, because this is not just good news. This is great news. This is incredible news for all of us. And finally, we want to provide financial support in order to make this happen, because unfortunately, it takes money oftentimes to do this. But again, this giving is your time. It takes time to do some of these things. We're asking you to spend your time. And also, if you have additional resources, that if you see one of these mission opportunities or more of them that touch your heart and say, this is what I want to be a part of, and you can help financially, we would appreciate that as well. Within the church budget, we support all these missions that you hear right now, but that's just a token of what they need in order to be able to accomplish their ministry goal. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to hear about community missions. First, we're going to hear about Journey to Dream, then what's going on with Main Street Church of Christ, follow that with Teen Life, and then with Christ Haven. All are great mission and ministry works, and you need to consider being involved in one of those. So in the conclusion, then Russell will finish up and offer an invitation for those who want to come forward and need prayers for them. So right now, what we're going to do is we're going to begin with the Journey to Dream ministry. And again, if you look inside this handout, you'll see the ministries we're going to be talking today. And again, please, if these or any other ones we're talking about during this month appeals to you, please take advantage of that. Thank you.
Good morning, awesome church. I think it's been a year since I have been here, so I will tell you a little bit about what we do, and then I want to share some of the great things that we have done since I've been here. So we support at-risk and homeless youth, ages 14 to 19. We have a campus. We used to refer to it as a shelter, and our kids are not all about that. So we refer to it as a shelter now, and we are also in school programs in Louisville and Denton. And we are serving over 11,000 at-risk kids in our school programs. And we have really seen that increase because of the COVID situation. So what, and I have slides up. I am not good with slides. I told them when I came in, I figure everybody can read, but I want you to see some of that. Oops, I just knocked something off. Sorry about that. In the state of Texas, there are about 16,000 homeless kids. In this area, we account for about 700 of those. And people say, well, what do you mean they're homeless? I don't see these kids anywhere. They are not on a street corner. They're doubled up. They're in hotels. They're sleeping with friends. They could be behind. We found them behind dumpsters in Walmart, Kohl's, things like that. So they are out there, even though that you don't see them. On the street corners. The ages are usually 14 to 18. A lot of parents are incarcerated or they have been sent back out of the country. And it takes about $109 a day to support these kids. And people say, well, why does it cost so much? It's because of the counseling and some of the other things that are provided them to get them out of the trauma situation that they have been in. So those are some of the facts that cause them to be homeless. And those are kind of the negatives. But I want to tell you some of the great things that you have helped us do over this last year, because we want to focus on the positive. So the biggest thing is we were a 14-bed campus. And with your support, we are now 19 beds, which seems like spitting in the ocean, but it's really not. We average about 274 referrals a quarter. And so we were able to add additional 5 beds. So now we're a 19-bed campus. And with the grace of God and a federal grant that we just wrote, we're hoping to build another 96-bed campus. So fingers crossed that God will direct us in that direction. We had 5 people that graduated from high school last year. We have 4 that are in college and doing great. We had 4 teens that were returned to their families, which is very, very unusual. So they were reunited. We had 3 16-year-olds that went back, that were adopted into their forever families, which is extremely unusual. When you get that to that age and you get a forever family, is amazing. We had 4 that were got their driver's license. Very scary, but they were they did get their driver's license. But I'm a big storyteller, and I want to, if you can put up the slide, I want to tell you about this young man. He was one of our first people that came into our shelter, and he was homeless beginning at the age of 10 and was really just kind of traveling through life, just didn't have much hope of anything, and was abusive to our staff and throwing things and throwing beds, and just, you know, we just did not know what to do with this young man. And really, we were at the point that we were going to have to put him back on the street because we just didn't know what to do with him. And we just kept praying, you know, God, please tell us what to do with this young man. We kept working with him and working with him. And finally, he turned around and he has now gotten his CDL license. He works for Walmart. And about 6 months ago, he pulled up in our driveway in his big rig from Walmart, scared us to death, and just wanted to share with us how well he is doing. And he's working from Walmart and on his road, and really thanked us for, you know, kind of staying the course with him. So it's the support of people like you that are able to help us do this. We have another one. He just is on his, he's at UNT and just graduated. Same thing, just continue to grow. But everyone asks, you know, planting the seeds of hope. And really, that's what we do is, trying not to well up. We had a kid that ran away over not getting enough mac and cheese. And I laugh about that now, but he ran away because he wanted another scoop of mac and cheese. And he had already had 2, and we said, no, there had to be for other kids. So he ran away, didn't see him, had been gone 2.5 years over a scoop of mac and cheese. Packed a step, gone, did not hear from him for 3 years. 3 weeks ago, we got a text from him, and it said, Miss Nisa, I am so sorry the way I treated staff. I am so sorry the way I left. I realized what you were doing for me. I realized what you were, how badly I treated you and how what you were pouring into me. And I just wanted to apologize for everything that I had done to you. And those are the seeds of hope that we are planting. And I always tell my staff, and I tell these kids, you never know when that little tiny seed is going to poke through that soil. But it's because of what you do that we can plant those seeds of hope. So thank you for standing by us and praying for us and your financial support to allow us to plant those seeds to poke through that soil, because it will happen. It may not be today, may not be in 5 years, may not be in 10 years, but it will poke through the soil. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
How does that feel like? I know it's really hard to talk about that rock bottom period of your life of being homeless, but can you share with us a little bit of what does that feel like?
That was truly, when I became homeless, that was truly the darkest moments of my life. To feel total and complete hopelessness. And I identify with people who are on the street today because I understand that hopelessness. I do. I know that you feel like there's nowhere you can run to, nowhere you can go that will help ease the pain and the trauma that you feel inside. Because we all have changes, challenges, and choices. And for me, I made a lot of wrong ones. And I did it mainly based on my pain and my fear. And that always led me in the wrong direction. Because the devil is alive and well at every corner. And he will disguise things to where it looks like it will be a good idea. And come to find out, it was more disastrous than the situation I'd gotten out of. So, learning to trust God again and realize that he is my provider and my protector. And when I see homelessness now, I pray for them. I pray that they get to know God the way I have, and that they let Jesus into their heart, because there is nothing worse, in my opinion, than being totally hopeless. And I found my solutions to my problems in the church. That's where I find my solutions, because God's there. God's there. And I know he is. I know in my life today that he is. But being under the bridge, nobody wakes up and says, hey, I want to be homeless today. Nobody does that. Nobody does. So I want to show compassion and love for people who are hopeless. I want to show them that they can get out of where they are if they really want to. I really wanted to. I wanted God to be proud of me again. I wanted to be proud of myself again. And I'm learning how to do that again. And it's a journey, but it's a worthwhile journey. Church here, it says lost sheep welcome, and I always wondered if this church really meant what they said, that lost sheep are welcome. And yes, Main Street Church of Christ absolutely means all lost sheep are welcome, because I was definitely one, and they welcomed me with loving arms, and they gave me purpose and direction again. And when I can be an example of what God's love is, then I know I have my purpose and direction.
Many teens don't feel like they have a trusted adult in their life that they can go to for help. Teen Life partners with schools and community volunteers to provide student support groups
to give teenagers a safe place to find connection and resources they need. Bombardment from social media, adjustments with family life, exploration of new relationships, and the expectation to succeed are just a few of the daily pressures facing teens. When these factors become too much to bear, teens often struggle. For some teenagers, this may mean issues at home or with their friends. But for others, these changes may cause interruptions in school.
Teen Life support groups are used to support the social and emotional needs of today's students. Primarily facilitated by highly trained local volunteers, students engage in an activity-driven curriculum, drawing strength from their peers and building a relationship with a caring member of their community. At the core of our groups, strengths and solutions are a priority. Students find their strengths and solutions to think through how they deal with stress, find resources,
build relationships, engage with school, and the inevitable ups and downs in life. Teen Life support groups are a needed resource to public schools and serve students on a preventative level. Teen Life equips community volunteers to be a resource to their local school by training them to facilitate support groups on school campuses. Together with volunteers, Teen Life encourages school staff and counselors by working alongside them and offering support and resources where needed. The curriculum, presented by staff and volunteers, empowers teenagers by helping them understand solutions to life's problems that can ultimately lead to a better future.
For more information on Teen Life support groups, visit our website,
www.teenlife.ngo.
About 7 years ago, I had a conversation. I don't know if he remembers this, but I had a conversation with Michael Brooks. In that conversation, I told him I'd be accepting the position to be the youth minister here at the Grapevine Church Christ. Shortly after that conversation, I sent a text message to a gentleman by the name of Chris Roby. At the time, Chris Roby was in charge of training facilitators for Teen Life. He's now the CEO of Teen Life. But I sent Chris a text and I said, "Hey Chris, I'm moving to Grapevine. As soon as I get there, I want to be a part of Teen Life. I want to be a facilitator." And to tell you that it's changed my life since I've been a part of it. There's just a few things I want to share with you about Teen Life and about what we do and what they have accomplished. To this point, Teen Life has served 11,240 plus students within the school systems, and the public school systems, that's where they're focused on. There are 500 plus trained school staff and facilitators currently within Teen Life. If you look at this map, I have a map up here. This currently, this is just the DFW area. If we expanded farther in the whole state of Texas, it would be a lot more. But this alone right here in the DFW area, these are the groups that are meeting right now with Teen Life. They're in multiple school districts across the DFW. Since I have come on to Teen Life 7 years ago, I have led a group in Southlake, Carroll. I've been at Colleyville, Grapevine, Northwest ISD, Coppell, and I'm currently at the Coppell Ninth Grade Center where I'm leading. But not only just the DFW area, again, if we expanded back, we would see a lot more within the state of Texas. But here recently, this has kind of caught fire. And there's other youth ministers that are hearing stories about what's happening in the state of Texas, what's happening in DFW. And so they're currently expanding, which is exciting to hear. And they have some groups in Oklahoma now, Tennessee, and there's more that they're hoping within the next few years that they'll be able to add. So the question is, why Teen Life? Why support Teen Life? My first challenge to you is scan that QR code. If you go to that QR code, it's going to send you to a link tree, if you know what a link tree is. But basically, it's going to give you tons of options of what you can see and learn about Teen Life, ways to give, things that you can see. But Teen Life, as you saw in the video, Teen Life believes that support groups offer teenagers a safe place to ask questions. to receive the emotional support that they need, and to develop healthy peer and mentor relationships. My very first teen life that I did was in South Lake Carroll. And I'll be honest with you, at the end of that group, I was like, did I do anything that was helpful? And I think a lot of it was just my first time. I was nervous. I didn't know what to expect going into it. I didn't know, you know, how to really tell, because you're with these teens for 8 weeks and then I'm kind of gone. Because really what I do as a facilitator is I'm with them with 8 weeks. Their counselor is in that group with them too. And once I leave, I'm trying to open the door for the counselor. I'm trying to support the counselor and allow the counselor to take over. But like I said, I kind of was like, did they really learn anything at the end of that group? Did I make a connection? So fast forward a year after that first group at Carroll High School, Sarah, Naomi, and I, Lila was not born yet, we were eating lunch, and we were at the Great Harvest Bread Company here in Southlake. Sarah and Naomi, they gave their order to the lady behind the counter. They go on to the table. I'm giving my order. I'm going to pay. And the girl behind the counter goes, Justin, you don't remember me, do you? You ever been in those moments where you kind of look up and you're like, nope, don't remember you? And so the best thing that I could come out to my mouth was, should I? Because I didn't remember her. Like, it wasn't clicking who she was. And she laughed it off and she said, I'm going to give you a pass this time. I'm going to give you a pass because the last time you saw me was for 8 weeks straight, and every week my hair was a different color. And as soon as she said that, I knew exactly who she was. She was in that first group, and she was right. Her hair was a different color. In that 8 weeks, I remember it being pink, blue, green, purple, all the colors that you could probably think of. But here's the thing. Her hair wasn't a different color. Her hair was her natural hair color. And behind this counter was a girl that was completely different and not the same girl that I led through in groups. A girl that was once shy and very reserved was now open and laughing and talking. She went on to tell me, and she said, hey, I just want to thank you for investing in teen life. She stated it changed her, how she looked at herself. And more importantly, she said, I finally realized that there was people around me who cared. Who cared? She said, I finally realized that I had resources that I didn't even know that I had because I was too close and reserved to really see them. So here's the deal. I've been a part of teen life for 7 years. I've seen it. I've heard stories. I've been a part of it. And I honestly believe if these support groups do not exist, teenagers are going to continue to fall between the cracks. My challenge to you is, instead of complaining about the current state of our culture, let's encourage, let's equip, let's empower this next generation to make better choices. If you want to know more about teen life, I would love to talk to you about it. I could talk to you for a really long time about it. But you may not want that from me. You may want to see other resources. I put some stuff on the table in the back that you can find and that you can see. Again, you can go to this QR code and you can find information about teen life and what it is. They're always looking for help. They're always looking for facilitators. It's very simple. It's one of those things where it's so simple, it's kind of mind-blowing. I remember going through the training, and I remember saying, this is it? Like, this is it? So if you want to hear more about it, come see me. Come talk to me. But my last request from you is be praying for teen life. Be praying for the facilitators. Be praying for the counselors. And specifically, be praying for the teens.
As we come into a season that is full of hope and joy, I think about everything that the word hope means to my family, to your family. Hope for a white winter season, hope for lots of presents under the tree, hope for your family to come together. But what does hope mean at Christ Haven? We see hope lived out every day in the form of siblings, childhood, reunification, future, and family. All of these are the ways the care provided at Christ Haven makes an impact in a child's life. All are ways they can see and feel hope in their lives. We can't provide these without your ongoing financial support. Will you consider making a gift to Christ Haven to help us continue supporting displaced children, teens, and young adults? Your gift today provides normalcy, dignity, and hope, now and for years to come. Here is one of the many ways that we see hope at Christ Haven.
My name is Nokal. I was originally from Ethiopia. I was born and raised there. Then I moved to Dallas, Texas, but things didn't go well there. You know, that home was just not the place for me in that season. And so my dad chose to put me at Christ Haven. When he found out about Christ Haven, I was not for it. I was like, nope, get me out of here. But looking back now, I think it was the best decision that he could have made. Before Christ Haven, like, you know, I didn't just go outside by myself and, you know, just explore and do all that, because, you know, we lived in an apartment and sometimes it wasn't safe, sometimes it was safe, right? But I think one thing I could remember is coming to Christ Haven and just like knowing that, you know, I could go to the playground and I was safe, you know, like I had my freedom and I could walk and my house parents are literally right there, and just like the open space, all of it was just so fun. Like, not only was I having fun, but I also knew I had the freedom and I was safe. Family dinner times were my favorite. And I think some of the conversations we would have is, how are you feeling today? You know, what are your goals? How can I help you? I think back then as a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old, I was just so annoyed, like, oh, again, we gotta deal with this. We gotta talk about our feelings and whatnot. But That definitely impacted me, because now I'm able to express myself and just be vulnerable and share how my day is, and even just use that in my classroom right now as I'm teaching some of my students. And so that definitely impacted me looking back now. So I think it took me a while to understand that. Like, you're learning, you're maturing, you know, there's a stage where you're like embarrassed by it, you don't want to mention it, but then you grow out of that and it's like, oh, no, actually, like, Christ Haven is home. I think I say that because I struggled with it. I think my senior year, my junior year, like, I realized I might go visit Dallas or I might go visit Abilene or I might do this, but I'm always back in Christ Haven. And it's like, that's the only place that's been consistent, stable. I mean, I would say Christ Haven gave me hope because it gave me so many opportunities at life. I can't imagine what my life would be like without Christ Haven's support, whether that's in college, during high school, when I was in Ethiopia, when I was here. Anywhere I go, it's like Christ Haven always came through and has always been supportive. And so I would say I'm always eternally grateful to God for giving me a place to call home. And yeah, so that's how it gave me hope.
Watching Milka is just one example of the amazing hope that we're able to provide here at Christ Haven for Children. Will you consider making an end-of-year gift today to continue to provide normalcy, dignity, and hope to all the children we serve today and for those in the future?
So I was reminded of a old Jewish parable that says this. One day a man said to God, God, I'd like to know what heaven and hell are like. God showed the man two doors. Inside the first one, in the middle of the room, was a large round table with a large pot of vegetable stew. It smelled delicious and made the man's mouth water. But the people sitting around the table were thin and sickly. They appeared to be famished. They were holding spoons with very long handles, and each found it possible to reach into the pot of stew and take a spoonful. But because the handle was longer than their arms, they could not get the spoon back into their mouths. The man shuddered at the sight of their misery and suffering, and God said, you have seen hell. Behind the second door, The room appeared exactly the same. There was a large round table with a large pot of wonderful vegetable stew that made the man's mouth water. The people had the same long-handled spoons, but they were very well nourished and plump and laughing and talking. The man said, "I don't understand." God smiled. "It's simple," he said. "Love only requires one skill. These people learned early on to share and feed one another, while the greedy only think of themselves." It reminds me of James 2, and I won't read the whole thing, but James 2 ends in verse 15, not ends, but the section ends with this: "If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill,' and yet do not supply their bodily needs, what good is that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead." And I think over the last 15 to 20 minutes, as we've seen each of these, Journey to Dream, Main Street, Teen Life, and Christ Haven, we see the call on our life of what it means to be in mission. We see what James talks about in James 1, that we have been implanted with a word in us. And what does that word do? James says, well, that word tells us to go into the brokenness of the world, to notice the homeless teens, to notice the homeless around us and not point fingers or judge, which is easy to do. Let's be honest. We've all been there. I've said this before. How many times have you written the story for the homeless person that you see on the side of the road? Or just as Justin said, the teenagers that we see on an everyday basis who we think, well, geez, if they're going to lead the world, we're going to go downhill from here, without thinking of maybe just starting a conversation, finding out about them, where they're at in life. And James tells us, you want to know what heaven is? You know what heaven inside of you is? It's taking care of them. It's entering into their brokenness. It's not being afraid of them being a little different than you. Our lives of being on mission calls us to be the people who are not afraid of stuff. We don't sit on our high horses, as my Nana used to say, and think that we're better than everybody else, pointing fingers and saying, if they would just be like us. And instead, what we see is our call to being on mission and the implanted word in our lives is to be heaven on earth, which is putting our spoon in the vegetable stew, and instead of trying to feed ourselves, we give it to the other person next to us. And the beauty of it is what we see, and as we hear the stories from Nisa and Justin, is at some point, they feed us too. They give us good news. And that's the most important thing. So hopefully today, you've seen that. You've seen what the call is on our life, the call on the church in our lives, of how we're trying to let that implanted word open our hearts and even blossom in us so that we see others differently. Right? We love our neighbor as ourself. And going further in Philippians, as Paul writes, that we even see others as better than ourselves. It's a hard thing, but you know how it starts? One conversation. One movement forward towards someone else. That's how it starts. So this has been a good day. I love this day. I love this time just to see what's going on, but then what else we can do and how else we can help. And hopefully, as I said last week, that God is tugging on your heart, that the Spirit is stirring in you something, opening your eyes, and hopefully seeing your neighbors differently. If you do have any needs, if you have any prayer requests this morning, if the Spirit is tugging on your heart in this moment, I'll be down front. We'll have elders down front. Come now as we stand and as we sing.